music radio free. You see blue skies and think of sea. How are you doing? And later on, switch on the TV. They give me a news, they give half truths to me. They give us wise, they feed us lies. How are we doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Educate, they fabricate. And we sit back till it's too late.
The Radio Avenger.
Rick Adams is on.
Welcome aboard, ladies and gentlemen. Rick Adams, Radio Avenger, tonight on this Monday night edition of our program. And tonight, we have a very interesting guest, as usual. We have John Kaminsky with us. You may or may not have heard him recently on RBN, but he, if you haven't, is a writer who has certainly written for a number of publications and articles in those publications over a period of time. He's a journalist who served as editor of no less than 8 different small newspapers over a period of 3 decades. And he recently distinguished himself on the internet as one of the very few who has opposed this Jewish perversion of reality that now threatens the health of every living thing on this planet. As a result of his forthright analyses of these international bankster gangsters, the most hideous plots ever perpetrated on humankind, Mr. Kaminsky has been banned from many websites, which has, certainly sparked the interest of people like us here on this very program, dealing with the satanic compromise, which has polluted and has diminished, if you will, the quality of life in this planet. He is no stranger to controversy, and one of his great mentors and people that he admires so much, of course, is a gentleman that you all know. And I won't say any more, because you'll know when we mention him. Maybe I should. Why not? Eustace Mullins is the man we're talking about. And let me say hello to John. Hello, John Kaminsky. Hi, John. How are you? All right. I can barely hear John, so let's see if we can crank him up a little bit more.
Okay. How's that?
All right. I got you. Yes, sir, John. Welcome aboard this program with Rick.
Thank you, Rick. It's an honor to be here, and it's an honor to talk about Eustace Mullins anytime and any place.
I agree fully, and tonight we will do that, talk about this man who just passed away last year and spent with us a few hours from time to time in the last couple of years or so, sharing his great insight, his great knowledge of a variety of topics. And we'll share some of that tonight. Plus, we're going to ask some questions of people that might be able to help you out and all of us at the same time concerning Eustace and his works and what will happen to them in the near future. Getting the word out is very important for people who are students of history. I know that's what your goal is tonight, so that will be my pleasure. We'll come right back, John, when we begin, folks. Stay with us.
By some awful quirk of fate, the Morlocks had become the masters and the Eloi their servants. The Morlocks maintained them and bred them like cattle.
Okay, we're back now. And John is our guest tonight, John Kaminsky. And John, first of all, for those who haven't heard you yet on any of the programs, such as Deanna Spingola's program, why don't you just start off and begin where you'd like to begin in your own quest for search for Eustace Mullins and the preservation of his works. Tell us a little bit about that.
Thank you, Rick. I've been aware of Eustace Mullins for 20 years, but I didn't appreciate his impact and what he had done until very recently, when in the last couple of years I had a chance to speak with him by phone a couple of times for hours at a time, and then in the last year of his life got to meet him in person when I had kind of boned up on what he had done. And what Eustace Mullins did was write over 200 publications that are the most accurate description of American history ever written, because they cut through the veneer of mainstream media that has been placed over history and nails the people behind the scenes who have created this slave society that we now live in. Eustace detailed that most meticulously, and I think his fans appreciate him for his diligence of recording all these corporate genealogies and governmental cabals down to really incredible detail. But it's one of the major goals of my life to preserve and publicize the works of Eustace Mullins for two very important reasons. Mm-hmm. The first is that his description of the people of Shem is bona fide evidence that the Jewish claims to some kind of Hebrew lineage are at the very least badly distorted. The other part, which I like more, the other value of Eustace Mullins, is that he draws a picture, a clear picture, of the sequence of events of the last 400 years that show how the Dutch Jews bought Cromwell, who overthrew the King of England, how they gained a foothold in England after being banned there for 400 years. They precipitated the French Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, both of the world wars, the Spanish Revolution, and they are in complete control of our government today. People can't see that. You say that to people and they recoil in horror and ask, you know, what kind of mushroom I've been eating. Mm-hmm. But that's the suppressed history that has been rubbed out by the increasingly totalitarian mind lock of Jewish media that has us all in its grip.
Very well said. I would concur with you wholeheartedly. And it is true that Eustace himself, having known of him and read his works, by the way, myself for about 40 years, I can honestly say that he was quite an inspiration to many of us for his works, as you say, but more importantly for his honesty, his integrity, and his unwillingness to compromise on the most fundamental and basic of efforts aimed at revealing this hidden tyranny, as it has been called, the tyranny that dwarfs all other tyrannies. And it is indeed very true that the works that he has done certainly earned him, from both friend and foe, quite a reputation, John. As you know, his enemies are definitely the enemies of all of us, I believe, in our nation today. And he certainly was targeted As you know, those who don't know enough about Eustace, tonight maybe we can share some of that history and his birth and his years, his growing up and his influence with Ezra Taft Benson and some of the others, Ezra Pound, the people that he knew in government, people that he befriended, McCarthy and others, and you know, his knowledge of Washington, his knowledge of the insiders was, I think, almost second to none. So we'll try to explore some of that, John.
Definitely so. He gave Joe McCarthy all his information, and he had it, Eustace had it nailed. But the networks, Ed Murrow and people like that, mm-hmm. ridiculed him as a red baiter and all of this other stuff. And it's like, we didn't realize back then in the 50s, we weren't cognizant of the fact that the word Jew and the word communist are synonyms. And Jews, as represented in 1950 society, were just another member of the American melting pot, even though by then they'd gained control of the government. They had it long ago. People, Eustace taught me this. People don't realize that our government has been controlled by Jewish bankers in a totalitarian fashion since 1913. And everything that's happened, all of the catastrophes and depressions and wars and plagues, everything that's happened has been engineered to make a profit for the Jewish bankers who own the Federal Reserve. That's mm-hmm. the core of evil in the world at this point. That's and right. We, Americans, are saying, we love our country, we have a system, we support the Federal Reserve. Well, the Federal Reserve is melting down the whole world and shipping it off to Israel. And if we don't pay attention to the Jewish problem, as Eustace Mullins urged, we're all going to be dead soon.
Well, it certainly is true that they're working on that goal, and they are doing what they do best. You know, if you get back into his earlier works in The Curse of Canaan, you might see quite a bit there that is scriptural. And, you know, just the other night, last week, I myself made reference to this murderous plague upon our land. From the beginning of this age that we refer to it as the Adamic Age, from the murder of Abel all the way down to the coming slaughter of the two witnesses on the streets of Jerusalem. And that was a good place for me to end, I thought, because that is what it says in the scriptures will consummate their rulership and the end of it and their destruction. So I think that's important as a timeline for me. I don't know about others, but for me, it's a timeline of the rampage, this murderous rampage throughout the ages, throughout the millennia, that is recorded right in the scriptures themselves. And Eustace understood this, I think. He really could get into it quite well and adapt to it. You see?
Yes, indeed. My preference, I'm more of a political guy, so I go for the way mm-hmm. he details the meeting of the Rothschilds meeting in 1847 and deciding to split the U.S. into two parts, and then proceeding to precipitate the Civil War. Facts like that make, I think, at least I use enough of them, I use as many as I can find, facts like that make people sit up and say, holy cow. Mm-hmm. But they don't make enough people sit up and say, holy cow, because I don't know what it is, but people don't want to hear this stuff, even though these are the components of the very things that are ruining their lives.
Well, up until now, maybe that was the case, John, but mm-hmm. when the pain level began increasing within the last year or so, I have taken notice of the fact that both here and in TV programming, greater numbers of people now have actually sat up and taken notice. And then those people who do still think cerebrally and have some functioning brain matter and a soul would indeed be more inclined to inquire and not be frightened by the attacks in the media or be frightened by their attacks on them personally, to stand up and join in the forces of righteousness against the unrighteousness and take a stand. You know, only when people are out of work and then begin to be out of necessities do they start to sit up and take notice and question things. And that's important because you know that you're reaching the end of the road and the diminishing returns when such a position is at hand. When everybody's prosperous and things seem to be prosperous, that's when it's almost impossible to try to tell people that things are not what they appear to be. And that's been my experience for a long time.
That's the way it is.
Yeah.
That's very true. That's a good observation.
Yes.
So we have a receptive audience to a lot of these things. I've been doing this for really only about 8 years on the internet, and five years ago, you couldn't say half the stuff that you can now. Now you can say a whole lot more. You can use the word Jew. You can point out that organizations have
hidden Jewish components. Hang on a moment, John. We've got the break. We'll come right back to that point. Stay with us, folks. We'll be right back with John Kaminsky.
Now we can see a new world coming into view. A world in which there is the very real prospect of a new world order.
Yes, it is here. We're back now with John Kaminsky. And John, I want to interject after you complete your thought, but please continue in what you were just saying about the internet and your experiences in the last few years.
Well, I don't know if I can complete the thought, but it struck me that I'm getting a little off track. My goals here are to assure the spread of the knowledge of what Eustace Mullins said, and to that end, I'll continue to write pieces that maybe expand little aspects of his thought, because there are portions of his books that, like, you could write whole essays about. But also, I want to express my concern for the future of his works and talk a little bit about the two parties I know who are involved with the custody and care of his work. I wrote a story a couple of years back, a year and a half ago, after my visit with Eustace, called Eustace Mullins at 86, and it was just a lovely visit in which I saw a man who was almost in a... He had a glow to him. I wrote about it. He was so peaceful. He had physical limitations, which his caretaker, Jesse Lee, tended to with a tremendous devotion. It was a joy to see. And of course, both men were very religious, talked openly about their Lord Jesus Christ. And boy, if I've ever seen living proof of the power of belief in Jesus Christ, Eustace was a really inspiring example of that during the time that I spent with him. He had a glow about him.
Yes, he was.
But since that time, since that great visit and a couple of other stories, I guess I've written 8 or 10 stories about Eustace on the internet over the years. Since that time, I lost contact with Jesse. I'm not able to reach him. I've received interesting PDFs of Eustace's work over the internet, which at one point I think it was Curse of Canaan, but it might have been Secrets of the Federal Reserve. I forwarded that around to my list, about 500 people. And I had a couple of the real scholars among them write back to me and suspect that there was some kind of discrepancy in the text. And there's three of us involved in this, four of us involved in this conversation, one in Canada, one in Vietnam, one in Belgium, and me. And we're kind of looking at these texts and saying, have they been changed? And we have one example we think has been changed where some mindless religious rhetoric, in my mind, seemed to have been inserted. Now, to top that off, out of the blue the other day, I got a call from Dr. Ed Spencer, who published a volume of Eustace's Curse of Canaan, and he called me up asked a very curious question, because he was looking for a notorious Jewish Cyan, and I said I didn't know how to get in contact with her. And we had a pleasant conversation, and he sent me a copy of the book. It's a very nice book. I've only recently opened it, so I can't see. It looks like a reproduction of the original. But the thing that sticks in my craw about this, and I have more insight on the Eustace Follies the last couple of years of his life, but Eustace did tell me that he never got a dime from Ed Spencer for this book. And so
I'm not surprised.
I hold that against them. So, but again, my great concern is that the public desperately needs to know the knowledge that Eustace has put forth in these books. And as much as there are great exponents of what Eustace has said and people who utter sentiments similar to what he advocated, there hasn't been a concerted effort on the part of the community of patriots, if I may say that, to make Eustace's thoughts and his points known. It's like people say, oh yeah, I read that book, it was a great book, and they can talk about various vignettes. And yet, I am an idealist. I want Eustace taught in the public schools. This is the real.
It's like
history.
Bringing the Bible back into the schools. We can't have that now, John.
Well, it'll never happen, and I mean, this is.
I think we're better off actually trying to destroy the public schools, and I think that's the best thing we can do. And I think, quite honestly, the system is destroying itself, which is quite good in and of itself.
I think so. Yeah.
Yes, I think it's also time for a break. So rather than have you start a new sentence, I will do that right now. And I'll mention, too, later in the program, we shall invite callers to speak with you, John, if you wish. So we'll do that, too, ladies and gentlemen, a little bit later on in tonight's program of Rick Adams Uncensored, right on Republic Broadcasting Network. And we will continue to explore the works of Eustace Mullins and what will become of his monumental efforts to bring truth to the American public. We'll return in just 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All right. That's it. Radio Avenger, Rick Adams is back here with John Kaminsky. And, John, we have plenty of time to talk now before the next break. So if you'd like to, please continue with what you were trying to say as far as your works are concerned.
I did a story a long time ago called The Ghost of Ezra Pound. And it was about Eustace when I had a more superficial view of what he was saying. But in delving more deeply into Eustace's works, I found some really jarring things in there. I think the first one I found was that that the Jews intend to kill all the Muslims in the world.
Mm-hmm.
That's their plan, and Eustace saw that clearly. And the first time I saw that, I thought, holy cow. It's like so many of these things we see, you think, oh my God, it's so much worse than I thought. And yet you have people coming back and telling you, I know some good Jews. They've been really good to me. So you're caught in between trying to advocate something that you know is true and having all this resistance mm-hmm. from people who have less information than we do, who are saying, you're being an anti-Semite. You're a hater. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, man, I have discovered the major problem with every crisis in the world is the financial crime that's occurring that caused it, and those are all controlled by Jews.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one in the whole world, and we don't realize we're enveloped in that. We've received our education from that, and we are trying to fight our way out of that by using the feeble tools that they've given us. And that's why I've always found Eustace Mullins to be one of the great weapons in deducing what's happening in politics, and especially with a point of view toward focusing on who is behind the scenes, who really ruled America during the 20th century. It was Samuel Untermeyer, it was Henry Morgenthau, it was Bernard Baruch, it was Henry Kissinger, and now it's Rahm Emanuel.
Mm-hmm.
So, people think I'm crazy when I say that. I mean, I can't talk to my relatives about this. I can't talk to my neighbors about this. I can talk to people who are well-read, but they don't rule the ballot box. They don't rule the decisions that are being made in America, and the decisions that are being made in America are made by people who are actors in this play
right.
that Eustace Mullins describes so adequately.
But look at it this way, John. Now, look at it this way. Take heart, because if you study the scriptures, you will find that everything you're describing about the incredulity around you is actually a biblical principle. You know, it does say, and the Lord himself has said, the whole world would be deceived, and only the elect and only those who are given knowledge to understand would see through the darkness, would understand what was happening, particularly in the end times, you know, the end of the age. And that's what's clear. I think if nothing else in the scriptures and prophecy, it is that truth that comes out crystal clear. Yes, your relatives think you're crazy. Yes, some of mine do, not all. Yes, my friends, some of them can only go so far and will not, for fear of the Jews, as Rittenhouse said, not be able to cross over the river to the other side of the banks. But that's good, because that means that it's a precious commodity today to see these things when others can't or won't. Let me just give you a little example, too, of something that I was made aware of recently, and that is the search engine Google. Now, maybe you're aware of it, too. And that is how Google itself has now come forth and issued an explanation of their search resumes and their results. And they start off by saying, if you recently used Google to search for the word Jew, quote unquote, you may have seen results that were very disturbing. We assure you that the views expressed by the sites in your results are not in any way endorsed by Google. We'd like to explain why you're seeing these results when you conduct the search. And they say that a site's ranking in their search results relies heavily on computer algorithms using thousands of factors calculating a page's relevance to a given query. Sometimes subtleties of language cause anomalies to appear that cannot be predicted. So a search for the word Jew, quote-unquote, brings up one such unexpected result. If you use Google to search for Judaism, Jewish, or Jewish people, the results are informative and relevant. So why is it a search for, quote, Jew different? One reason is that the word Jew is often used in an anti-Semitic context. Jewish organizations are more likely to use the word Jewish when talking about members of their group. The word has become somewhat charged linguistically, as noted on websites devoted by Jewish topics, such as those that appear. So that is their explanation and how they've actually altered their own landscape to accommodate pressure from the Jews. So I thought that would be relevant to what we're talking about tonight.
The if you Google my name, the second entry for maybe 6 or 8 months now has been titled John Kaminsky Obituary. And then as you read down below, it's the story I wrote that was Eustace's obituary. But the headline has it John Kaminsky Obituary, so I figure that was a message from the Sanhedrin directly to me.
Maybe. Maybe. Isn't that amazing? But now, Eustace, getting back to Eustace, his works, as you point out, his numerous books, and many, because he planned in the end that he never got around to finish, were inspired by various things, I guess, and various events, various people, wouldn't you say?
Well, he, I think there's a distinctly Jewish cast to his work, mm-hmm. if I may understate that, so. The Biological Jew, Mullen's New History of the Jews. I mean, you know, when people tell me about the Black Pope, or when they tell me about there's this new science called Ponerology that says it's the pathological people in the world who are responsible for our problem, or you want to talk about aliens or any of that stuff, any diversion from the reality that Jewish bankers have taken control of reality for about the last 200 years, infiltrated everything, and twisted everyone so far out of shape that most of us don't recognize ourselves anymore. Any alternative to that version, in my mind, is a Jewish distraction. And if you want to say that gives me a one-track mind, go ahead, but I think I'm on the trail of the truth here, and I think the world needs to hear it, that they are being robbed with their eyes wide open of their own heritage by this artificial society that has been created by the Jews.
Well, you know, I can sense it myself every day, just purveying people in this country and the changes that have taken place economically, let alone politically, in the last couple of years. I survey the landscape. I see the way people are losing their jobs, their homes, what they thought were their homes, they thought were their cars, they thought were their possessions. And, you know, I have a dual feeling about that. You know, some of that tells me that, well, it's a good thing in a sense, because this is God talking to them. This is Him, the Father, trying to tell them that they are suffering for a reason, and they are also being judged because of their sins. And who are they worshiping? Well, they're worshiping at the feet of the same people that are destroying them. And on the other hand, I have sympathy, because I say, well, they don't even know what they're doing. They don't know what's happening to them. And therefore, they are victims as well as perpetrators of their own demise. So I have this, you know, this schizophrenic view, in a sense, of what's happening to my fellow Americans and those across the globe, whether they be, Adamic or non or what have you. Without getting too technical, I just can't help but observe the fact that this plunder is happening in front of us, right in plain sight. And as you say, it's being done so boldly and yet so subtly and surreptitiously that most will not admit to it. They are frightened of it. They can't conceive. They can't conceive of something so diabolical happening to them by the people that they've been told right from the beginning were always victims. And that would, you know, it's a Pavlovian conditioning response that has been embedded within their psyche. You follow what I'm saying, John? I think you do.
I do quite
adeptly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty clear to me. I both admire and appreciate your sense of compassion for fair play, which you have gleaned from your Christian heritage, and that is something that most normal people glean from almost whatever religious heritage they have, because that's what religion teaches, compassion for others.
Mm-hmm.
But they count on you having that.
Right.
And then they turn the screwdriver in your spine. And that is an eternal battle between lightness and dark that probably won't be worked out before the end of time. So this turning the other cheek thing, while it has its merits, has been the very vehicle by which the populace has been pacified and regulated.
And even that has been totally taken out of context in the Bible, turning the other cheek. For whom? To whom? You know, it's one thing to have adversaries within your own brotherhood, your own tribe, and to forgive those who do things to harm you. But it plainly says in the scriptures, and asks the question, shouldest thou help the ungodly or give love to those who hate the Lord? And the answer is no. The answer is no. We're not under any obligation to love Satan or any of his minions. Not at all. In fact, if we do, we are partakers of their evil deeds.
Exactly. There's plenty of that going around.
Sure. Sure. So, I mean, that's an important point that Christians, of course, as you said, are constantly hit over the head with. You don't, you know, have any love for this group or that group or this one or that one. And you say, well, you're darn right. And that's because, you know, we're commanded not to love them, but to hate them in the scriptures. Now, that's pretty hard medicine for people to swallow, because today the churches are almost all created by the government through their tax-exempt status. And I just had this discussion with somebody in the family yesterday about these 501c3s and what they're really intended to do. And it went right in one ear and out the other.
Right.
Couldn't understand the whole meaning, you know. I said that there are more liabilities than positives. So he said, no, but there are benefits. There are benefits. And I kept saying, but no, those benefits are illusory. They are outweighed by the negatives, by the, quote, responsibilities that you have when you have a tax-exempt status. Rules and regulations, rights and responsibilities. And this is what it comes down to. People would rather see the glass, in their view, as half full rather than half empty, because they just can't deal with the reality of who and what we're dealing with, you see.
Not to switch writers on you midstream, but I've been reading an 1850s French lawyer named Frederick Bastiat.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he wrote a treatise on the law, which I've been studying here lately. And one of the things he says is that it is a timeless human goal to make money without working. That is the ultimate luxury to a lot of people. And that instinct has propelled this racket that has become a Jewish racket down through time, to where the shrewd ethic of the world is to make money without working and live off the labor of others. And I think that very much describes our current society, which is ruled by the predator Jews who have invented all these taxes and nonprofit corporations and laws to tie us up in a spider web of like Gulliver, where we're pinned to the turf by all of these responsibilities that have been created for us and ultimately are the things that are going to snuff out our liberty, which if they haven't already. Eustace was able to do chapter and verse on the specific laws and political decisions that were created to get us in this trap. And if we're ever going to get out of it, understanding the traps that Eustace wrote about are really essential. Things like Schiff, the running mate of Rothschild, arming the Japanese to destabilize the Russians from the Eastern Front, and having his efforts at arming the Japanese turn into a monster that was ready to seriously bite us in World War II. That was all created by New York bankers, much in the same way that Saddam Hussein was set up by the Jewish bankers in New York with the total approval of U.S. politicians. So now, as Eustace pointed out, Americans are wrapped up in the responsibility for letting these people use us this way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, good, excellent points. We'll come right back now with more of John Kaminsky right here on Rick Adams Uncensored on RBN.
Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
Yes, indeed, indeed. Thank you, George. We're back now with John, and John Kaminsky is working on the preservation of the works of Eustace. And, John, in the second hour, we'll open up the lines to calls here, but where do we go from here now? We've pretty well established the groundwork here and what people should know about Eustace and some of his works, of his many, many works that he's done. But how can we accomplish this goal? How is it that you are trying to do all of this?
Well, maybe I'm being lazy. Maybe I should have just contacted Matt, his nephew, who has, I believe, at last I knew, had nominal control over his books. And if I had the, you know, if I had the financial wherewithal to do it, not only would I buy all of his books, I'd sell them and distribute them to anybody who wanted it. I think people can get them by mail now, but I don't know the address. And the people who see that the two factions that seem to be in charge of how his works are going to be disseminated, for my money, are both behaving very strangely, and I fear that the sense of the achievements of Eustace, while they live on the internet in a fragmented way, are going to be lost to posterity because of lack of interest.
Well, that would be an unfortunate occurrence. And how is it that we can, on programs like this, avoid having that happen?
Well, I'd like as many people talking about this as possible, and in the process, try to talk about what Eustace was talking about. I mean, he was defending our liberties to the max and saying things that most of us have always been too afraid to say openly, and he paid a tremendous penalty for that throughout his life, and it really kind of astonishes me. I mean, I've never really been in a position to be to rescue a writer like so many people who have rescued me, but nobody rescued Eustace until the very end, until Jesse Lee came along. And there's a whole, how many minutes do we have?
Well, we still have a couple in this hour.
There's a whole there's a whole cloak and dagger thing about how Jesse snatched Eustace out of a Dallas nursing home while Ed Spencer was circling in the neighborhood. And but Jesse, for my money, Jesse rescued Eustace, put him on a 40-day raw food diet, and then took him on a kind of a carnival for the rest of his life. And I, when I saw Eustace, he was having a good time. And I mean, I looked in his eye. He did have periods of incredible lucidity, like he always did.
Yes.
But Jesse took really good care of him, and I'm really thankful that he did that for Eustace.
Right. All right. Well, we have the break coming up in 1 minute. It's a 1 minute break, and then we do already have some callers online that we can take as we go along, folks. But we're going to continue with this, and hopefully we'll come up with a consensus as to what is the best way and who is best able to do the work that you're trying to do, the preservation and dissemination of the works of Eustace Mullins. They are many, and you can Google them, and you could look them up on the net by just putting in his own name. All right, then, we will continue with our guest, John Kaminsky, here on the Rick Adams program, Rick Adams Uncensored, on Republic Broadcasting Network. Continue now to support RBN. We'll be right back.
Live, uncensored, Radio Free America. Another exciting, informative hour is warming up. Rick Adams is on fire.
Yes, indeed, we are, and this is the second hour of tonight's program with our guest, John Kaminsky. And I'd like to thank those of you emailing, and Tom in Brooklyn, thank you for that picture of Eustace in his final days when he was still trying to be active at his age. And by the way, John, what age was Eustace when he died?
He was a few months short of 87.
Okay, yeah. Well, I remember doing interviews with him and having seen him in Washington, D.C., actually, at a conference, and he impressed me very mightily with his wit and his knowledge, his extensive, acuity. Most of the time that he was just right on top of things, and I'll tell you, he'd put most of us, I think, to shame with his acuity, his response, and his wit was just fabulous. It was just great. He could always hold a sense of humor, no matter what topic was being discussed. So that's one thing about Eustace no one can take from him, that's for sure. And people should know, by the way, many of his works, of course, the Federal Reserve System that was updated in the 80s as the Secrets of the Federal Reserve, and so many of his other books and papers on the Warburgs, the Mandel House, and Woodrow Wilson, J.P. Morgan, the Kahn family. All of this, is what he specialized in. These are the subjects, the books and so forth, that he wrote himself and was able to produce and get out, into the mainstream of the movement. I remember, the books that I would buy occasionally across the landscape would be in bookstores, usually John Birch Society bookstores or American Pinion bookstores, and they were there. Some of them were there, and they were for sale. And if you wound up donating some of them to libraries in the American public library system, I found, my experience was, John, that it wasn't too long later that some of these books started disappearing off the shelves. And they
Absolutely.
Weren't taken out to an extended period of time and not returned either.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
No, he has such great titles. The Jewish Hell Bomb, I think, is my favorite, a story about Hiroshima. Mm. And And the biological Jew, which is a treatise on parasitism, these are the staples of his perspective.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. You know, one of the things about him, too, is that he, we're told, was very good friends with some of the Jews like Benjamin Friedman. And,
right.
Who was a Jewish scholar, by the way, who did write about, you know, the problem within, and Myron Fagan and people like that, whom he was not unfriendly with. Actually, he felt that they contributed mightily to his understanding of this issue. So that should be brought out as well, you know, so people cannot make claims about him.
No, he had a lot of respect for a lot of Jewish writers. Samuelson, who wrote about the Rockefeller gold conspiracy, and Eustace quoted them, and it seems then, correct me if I'm mistaken, Rick, but it seems then that there were public Jews that were actually critical of the Jewish influence. Whereas now, the people who try to pass for that, like Chomsky and Bloom and Zinn and people like that, are really delivering Jewish propaganda that America is evil and Israel is just another country.
Yep.
Which by now, at least in the minds of most of the people we hang out with, is such a discredited point of view, and yet that's what's still running mainstream media.
Absolutely. They've changed their ways to adapt, but that's for sure. We'll come right back. We will take questions just ahead. Okay, we're back now with our guest, John Kaminsky, and those of you who are listening, our number is 800-313-9443, as you know. And before we take a call, let me also just state again that Eustace was not a monstrous individual, you know, the way the media would paint him, or the enemies would say that he, you know, he was just a man of hatred or anything. He was quite a gentle man, actually. And as you said, he had friends on all sides of the aisle because he was an inquisitor. He wanted to know the truth, and he depended on people also feeding him information from time to time. The thing is, some people latched on to Eustace. Some of them used him for their own gain and for their own profit, as you know, and as you just stated. But I remember the time when David Duke's organization, you know, invited me to attend this conference down in Louisiana, and Eustace was one of the speakers. And then I found out that Eustace was left flat there with no money and had to get himself home. They, you know, what they did with Eustace was to use him, I'm afraid, and to try to make money off of him, and then left him flat broke. And he told me that himself, you know. And I was kind of disturbed about that.
Well, that's not as bad as when the cops threw him down the steps in Staunton, Virginia, and when he had a heart attack and his heart stopped, and he was like 80 when that happened.
Yeah, yes. I remember that.
He took some hits. He took some real abuse. He took 32 years of FBI surveillance. He took all these nasty rumors, and I'll tell you what I saw when I saw him was a sense of kindness and fairness that pervaded everything he said.
That's one thing I can honestly sense just from meeting and talking with him, is that if you asked him a question, he'd give you an honest answer, and if he didn't know, he would tell you. He wouldn't fake it. You know, he was very gentle,
right.
As I said, very amicable to all, and he was just a scholar. The man was just simply a scholar and a reporter and a writer, as well as a speaker. So you really can't take that from him. Definitely not. I think he could stand up against anyone intellectually.
Oh, definitely, Rick. I just wanted to mention one thing to you about phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
Put the highly sensitive Jew filter on it. Because on every interview I do, the first caller is always a Jew pretending not to be one.
Really? Oh, my. All right. Well, we'll have to see what happens. All right. We'll do that. All right. 800-313-9443. And let's see. We'll take our first call right now. We have, I guess it's Steve in Wisconsin. Hello there, Steve.
Yes, I'm not a Jew pretending not to be one, but you.
All right, go ahead.
But you might think so by the way of the question that I'm going to ask. Okay, so just to warn you, one thing I've noticed, you know, I'm opposed to Israel and I'm opposed to U.S. interventionism in the Middle East, but one thing I've noticed, you know, in the European countries today, the influx of Muslims into those countries is causing a horrible problem in many European countries where, you know, in some of those countries today, half of the babies born are born to Islamic parents. And there's just no denying the extent of difficulty that this immigration is posing to these European countries. And one thing I see with a lot of anti-Zionists, and I consider myself an anti-Zionist, is that they tend to downplay, you know, in focusing on Israel, they tend to downplay the significant danger which Islamic immigration poses to the countries that are taking these refugees in. Now, Eustace Mullins had a theory where he was saying that the Zionists, the Jews, consider both the Gentiles and the Arabs, Muslims, to be enemies, and that they're setting up a situation in which we'll have a war. According to his words, he's trying to set up a war between the Christians and millions, which pits millions of Christians versus millions of Muslims, and thereby extinguish both enemies with that one move. Do either of you have a comment to make?
I'm going to let John respond to you first. Go ahead, John.
I see that as happening, effective and well underway. Especially, for some reason, I'm thinking about the evangelicals at the Air Force Academy, but the troops are beefed up with this evangelical fervor. They're fueled by drugs. They are encouraged to abuse the local inhabitants. And I think pretty much the Muslims, for all the violence you see put on television, I think pretty much the Muslims kind of put up with it because they can't. I mean, it's like us trying to overthrow our own government. What are you going to do, take a cap gun and go to the White House? I mean, there's nothing these people can do about these international forces that are coming in and crushing them for reasons that they don't understand.
I'm talking about Arabs, though, in European countries, where the Arabs have immigrated to European countries such as Germany, Switzerland, Netherlands, Belgium, and where in those countries, not that they're committing acts of terror, but the crime problem, 70% to 90% of them are unemployed, they're living on welfare, bankrupting the welfare systems of these little countries.
Now, and Steve, I would venture to say, Steve, that the immigration policies that are creating these dislocations were set up by the Jews as part of their destabilization program.
I agree. I agree with that. In fact, there's a video on YouTube which is called How Zionists Divide and Conquer, mm-hmm. in which a Jewish mm-hmm. woman in yeah. Sweden explains how she's leading a group that encourages multiculturalism. But mm-hmm. How do you feel? Do you think that lines up with Eustace's theory about hitting the Christians versus the Arabs?
Yes, they do want a war. In fact, they want the whole world to be at war again in the final war, the Third World War that they've created, the other two. But the thing is, I look at it this way. I would agree with you that all of the countries of the world, European countries, should be primarily for Europeans. America should be primarily for Europeans. And Asians should be for Asians, blacks and Arabs and so forth, for their own part of the world. That's the way I've always believed. However, the reality today is such that you have people who are emigrating, and it is because the same people in the synagogue of Satan have demanded that these countries, particularly our nations and our countries in Europe, open their borders to everything and everyone. Now, it's not just the so-called Muslims or the Third World, but let's say, what about the Chinese? What about the other Asians? And what about the South Americans? And is it the same for them that we should be concerned? Well, I don't have anything against any of the Muslims or Arabs, except those within them that commit the crimes. If they do, that should be true of anybody. But what is happening really is not a problem of too many Muslims coming in, but quite frankly, of too many Jews who have come in and run these countries into the ground and then taken over their immigration policies like they have with us here, and then turn them upside down. So they want a mongrelization. They want this to take place and then to see a war between them. They know that this will breed conflict. And then since they have control of the media, then they tell us that we need to be watchful for this group or that group, so long as we don't think of them as the instigators, you see? And they, in their country, in their land that they occupy, are the only ones who exclusively can do what they tell everybody else they can't do. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, but Rick, when you say that Muslims aren't the problem, in France, for example, today, now there are more mosques than there are churches.
Yeah, but you know, whose fault is that, though, really? Is it the fault of Muslims, or is it the fault of the so-called church and the Christians who have really given, actually have buried their heads in the sand to the real problem? The real problem of international Zionism that has destroyed their countries, their culture, their Christianity. Don't you think that's the source of the problem?
Yes, I do. I would agree with you on that. It's just that sometimes I get a little bothered when I hear a lot of the anti-Zionists seem to, you know, when you try to point out that there is a problem with Muslim immigration in Europe especially, that they just ought to, this is sort of a reflex action, they say, oh, no, the Muslims don't pose a threat. I was just having a discussion this afternoon with a Jewish anti-Zionist, and when I suggested to him, you know, that there is a problem with radical Islam immigration in Europe, he became very said absolutely not. These people pose no threat whatsoever, and I just can't. I just don't think the facts justify that attitude.
Well, okay.
No, there are population studies that I've seen recently that chronicle a tremendous Muslim majority in Europe by like 2038. Based on a birth rate of 8.3 children per Muslim wife, and I believe it's when it goes under 2.3, it guarantees that the population won't grow, and Europe is like 1.6.
All right. We got the break, though, and I want to take other calls. Steve, I thank you for sharing your views with us, and we can agree to disagree and agree on some points. Thank you very much. We got to come back with Shelley in Texas. Stay tuned.
Don't feel like the Lone Ranger. You've got the Radio Avenger on your side.
Yes, we are. Here we are having a very interesting discussion tonight with author and reporter and editor John Kaminsky. I just want to say one thing before we go along to other calls, and that is you have to balance the equation with regard to this purported threat to Europe from Islam. Remember, this is being driven by world Jewry, and also the fact of the matter is, think of how they view the United States and these European nations that have taken part in the invasion of their homelands. You know, John, when you think about it, here the United States is doing exactly what you started out saying they're doing on behalf of Israel, the dirty work of occupying their nations pillaging them, taking them over, killing their people, and then we're concerned, supposedly, about them taking over our country. It just doesn't make any sense to me. And the other thing is that, you know, look at the reality of what's going on today with how Israel has assassinated these people in Iran, the scientists, and then uses their worm in the computer to penetrate and disable or deactivate the processing of information in their computers in their nuclear energy facilities. Look at what they're doing now in Tunisia with the instability they've helped to create by hoping this will flood throughout the Arab nations in the Middle East and overthrow governments that then they will come in and take over. I mean, I can see the handwriting. I can see
Rick,
the invisible hand right there in these countries. Yep.
Rick, I just wanted to say that I consider my streak of the first caller being a Jew pretending not to be a Jew to be still alive on the basis of what Steve said when he said he was having a conversation earlier in the day with an anti-Zionist Jew, which is a category that I don't really recognize, and the fact that he wants to put out there that there are Jews who actually oppose what Israel is doing, I personally think, and a lot of people don't agree with me, but I personally think is a category that does not exist, because there is a higher priority in the beliefs of Jews that they have to defend Judaism. And it isn't Jews that I'm really attacking so much, it's Judaism. I don't want to pin anything on Jews that's any more than they are people who are just like us who have been misled by bad dogma. And the bad dogma is not Zionist. The bad dogma is Jewish, which includes these horrible Zionist principles. So anybody who's telling me that he is an anti-Zionist Jew is being a dissembling Jew, because his first allegiance is to his worldwide nation of Judaism and all of his responsibilities to the countries he happens to live in come secondary to his allegiance to the Jewish nation.
Right. I agree with that. I think you're hitting on something. Let's take a call from
Shelley.
My streak
is still alive.
Now, what's that?
I say my streak is still alive.
Okay. All right. Shelley is up in Texas. Hello, Shelley.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I halfway agree with what you just said, John, and Rick, what you said about the previous caller, I agree with your slight opposition. I'm calling tonight. The Money Masters is how I first came to Eustace. Somebody suggested that I study him, and there's a Google an interview with Eustace Mullins. It is absolutely wonderful, and I watch that he is so believable. This was just a few years before he died. 1.5 hours. He is very gentle in this interview and just so completely believable. No notes at all. All from memory. And I just fell in love with the guy. And there's something about him. He's so believable. And I came to both of you through Eustace. I think I mentioned to you, Rick, before about his listening to you the first time, because of your interview with The Curse of Canaan. And then, of course, John's works. I came up with Eustace, you know, and many links to your works, and all of which, not all. I haven't read all and downloaded all, but I'm trying to, because I'm afraid that they might vanish at one day in the future. So
that's what we're all concerned about.
Yes. Yes, but they're very good, especially had I had not been for Eustace, I probably would have ignored it as anti-Semitic or some other politically correct term. And by the way, since this all this revelation that I've had, thanks to Eustace and others, I also have a difficulty. I can talk to few friends, no family members, and it can be tough. But I agree, Rick. Take heart, study the scriptures. There are a few that really understand the evil of our time.
Yes,
especially.
That's very true. Thank you for
There's
that.
There's no money in it either.
Oh, and I had one other thing to say.
Okay, hang on. We'll take you right after the break, and we'll also take a few other calls as we continue with tonight's program. Rick Adams, Uncensored.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
Back now, folks, and first of all, we'll get back to Shelley. And Shelley, you had another thing you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, let's see. It was a few, but I'm trying to flip through my notes here. I did want to thank you very, very much, John, for the link to Curse of Canaan PDF file on your... It was after one of your recent articles.
Right.
And thank you so very much for that.
That's a great story.
Oh, yeah, thank you. I had been looking for that, searching for it, and I tried to get it in the library, and it's not a single library, even interlibrary loans across state, no one had it. Not surprised, I guess.
There's a great mind lock that has been foisted upon America where all of the coherent explanations of the tyranny that has stolen our liberty have been methodically eliminated from availability so that people don't know what Eustace Mullins or Archibald Ramsey or Gerald L.K. Smith or Congressman McFadden or Lindbergh or any of the people who described the horrible Jewish takeover that was befalling us constantly throughout the 20th century. People don't have an opportunity to see that, and that's really the cause of the death of America, because that's what has sucked the blood out of the country.
Yeah, I agree with that. Thank you for the reference to Gerald L.K. Smith. I've not yet heard of him. I wrote him down. Mm-hmm. But I do believe that the major problem is money. You had mentioned the problem with Christianity turning the other cheek, and Rick, you know, said that even that was taken out of context. But, you know, we also can remember Christ's only example of quote-unquote violence in the Bible was against usury. And, you know, that was that turning the other cheek? I don't think so.
That's an order I could follow. Throw the money changers from the temple I've been made to understand that is the most important utterance of all time.
Yep, I agree with that. I agree with that.
All right, Shelley, thank you for your call. We're going to move along now for other callers. We've got Werner in New Brunswick. Hello, Werner.
Good evening.
Yes, sir.
Good evening.
I just lately became aware of Eustace Mullins, and it's too sad that the gentleman has passed away. We need more like him.
Mm-hmm.
But John? One of the previous callers, he mentioned over there in Europe more and more the immigration of people from the Islamic countries.
Yes.
And I said a while ago to someone, I said, where they didn't succeed during the Middle Ages and in the 17th century, they do it now in a peaceful way. But I don't have anything against when people want to live in peace, and many people from the Islamic countries, they are trying to better themselves and flee from basically from bad conditions where they're living there.
Werner.
Yeah?
Werner, if you want more stories about Eustace, go to my website, johnkaminsky.info.
Okay.
And I've done 5 or 6 stories on Eustace. They're in there interspersed with a bunch of other current
and
events.
By the way, you should spell your last name, John, so people will get it correctly.
Well, I know how his name is being spelled.
No, but a lot of people might not, Werner. So we'll
spell
do
it
that
for
anyway.
Us, Werner.
K-A-M-I-N-S-K-I?
Correct.
Polish.
Yes, Werner.
It's Polish, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
No, I've been in contact with friends over in the old countries, and I'm dismayed how free speech is being muzzled over there.
Yeah. Everywhere.
And I noticed there it started up, I would say, roughly about in the early 70s.
Well, when what's so funny about it, Werner and John, is that all of these newspapers today, these editorials that are mimicking Judaism and are Jewish largely, are telling us how terrible it is that Islam wants to silence free speech and punish, diversity in Europe when it's they, the ADL types, that have gone there and forbidden people to even discuss the Holocaust. I mean, you talk about free speech being quenched. What could be more obvious than that?
Look. That's the paradigm. That is the paradigm for our times, and it relates to 9/11. In that we're not supposed to talk about the Germans Eisenhower killed during World War II, and we're not supposed to talk about the complicity of the Bush White House driven by Dick Cheney with all of their Jewish handlers to kill 3,000 of their own citizens as proof positive of why they should make war on imaginary terrorists.
Yeah.
As I say, you know, I like to look at things objectively, even so the picture is sometimes very horrible. Now,
sorry, what?
The most mass killings that have been done over the last 150 years, who were the perpetrators?
Same group.
Yeah. Who were the perpetrators in the communist countries under the Soviet Union?
Jews.
So, and as I say, we have to look at it, and have to look at it objectively, you know,
yes,
not to
do.
Incite hatred, but we have to put things in the right perspective and be objective.
We have to be able to use the term Jews.
Okay. Werner, because thank you for your contribution again. I'm going to move along, though, for time.
Say, look,
we have other callers now. Lark in Texas is up next. Lark, hello.
Hi, Rick. John Kaminsky, how are you, sir?
Yes.
Hello. I've been reading your stuff for the last few years, and I can't tell you how many of your articles I really appreciated and bookmarked.
Thank you.
I want to remind the listeners, Rick, if I might, that Eustace, in an interview on your program, stated that his name, Eustace, is from the Aramaic word for justice.
Yes, that's true. You remember that, huh?
I do. I remember a lot. But, you know, it's true that many Jewish people are indoctrinated, just like really so many of us are. They're indoctrinated to this kind of tribal or group psychopathy, which embraces Jewish supremacism. And what I find, though, that kind of colors everything that they think and do, unfortunately, is this psychopathy of revenge. Mm-hmm. And I saw that even in my readings of the Old Testament. And I think it persists to this day, unfortunately. But here's my question. I wonder if you have discovered, John, this thing called communitarianism.
No, not to my knowledge. But certain things tend to have different names, so tell me a little more.
Well, it's something that I would love it if you would latch on to. It is really an invention of the people who were so-called Christian utopians in early America and at the same time over in Europe and this was prior to the time of Marx and Engels, etc. But there seems to me a convergence of what I can fairly call Christian communism, or Christian utopianism, if you will, and the Jewish mindset, which feeds on this idea that they are the chosen shepherds of the flock, and that the persecutions, quote-unquote, that they have suffered throughout history have to be avenged, and the only way that it can be avenged is because the Jewish people are the only ones with the brains and the souls and everything else to make everything right again.
Right.
And this is a rather sick, almost a Stockholm syndrome that it's put Christians and Jews into.
That's right.
But communitarianism was actually a recent construct that was resurrected more fully in the 70s and the 80s under a Israeli-American emigre from first Germany during the 30s. He was a fighter for the Jewish terrorists taking over Palestine in the early 40s. And then he emigrated to the United States, and he's been a special policy advisor for every American president since Jimmy Carter.
Who was that?
His name is Amitai Etzioni.
Huh.
And his where you can get this information, see, communitarianism is now the secular philosophy by which serves as the blueprint for what we might call the New World Order. And I think it's very Jewish, and it's also very Zionist.
Yeah.
But where you can get the best information on this is at a website that you can do a search on called Living Outside the Dialectic. And a man with your scholarly bent and penetrating insight, I would really love and appreciate to hear your insights on this topic one day, because this is the philosophy that has taken over our public school systems, the university systems. This man lectures the top brass in the military.
Happy drones.
Pardon me?
He wants happy drones.
Yes, and by the way, just as an aside, that the video referenced by the first caller on YouTube, How Zionists Divide and Conquer, this is a very, if you see this video, it reminds me, to be honest with you, of Jewish rabbis like Michael Lerner, of Tikkun Olam, lecturing Christian Zionists on morality.
Yeah. He always brings up the slaughter of the Indians and said, you slaughtered the Indians so we can slaughter the Palestinians.
Well, and Americans are now supposed to hate their government because it's so evil. It's been evil from its inception, and we should be glad to see it go and all that, sure.
Well, it was queered by the Jews from the beginning with Alexander Hamilton. There's a great new book out, Hamilton's Curse. And, in fact, I was going to do a review of it, but I gave it away for Christmas before I finished it.
Oh, boy.
This is a book that really tells you what went wrong with the American Revolution, and we have been pummeled since then, because the banks have never really lost their grip. Even when Andrew Jackson threw them out for a time, they crept back in, and they have queered the whole deal. It's like we were never a free country. England always had control. And it's like they still do, and there are all these financial entanglements that started with Alexander Hamilton and rendered the Constitution essentially null and void, which is why when we go to court now, the judge always says the Constitution doesn't matter here because we're operating under another system of law. That's the great story that still needs to be written.
That's I appreciate your thoughts on that, and just to conclude my remarks.
Yes.
I want to say that communitarianism also has, because it's a philosophy, there is also a theological component. And I think you would find that especially interesting.
Well, I'll check it out when I see it, but I pretty much limit all of my political philosophies to where liberty has to be the central concept, and if it's not trumpeted above everything else, I'm not really interested in it.
Well, believe me, that is life, liberty, and property is everything.
Yeah, it's the communitarian war against it that really encompasses everything else, Lark.
They are
right?
against life, they are against our liberty, and they do not want us to own property, and that's a fact.
We're the property, right?
Yeah.
All right, Lark, thank you.
I think that's also called Judaism.
Yes, Talmudism. All right, let's take a call from Ed in Utah now. Hello, Ed, you're up next.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Rick. You're doing a good job tonight. What a show. I had the pleasure of meeting Eustace Mullins. He was at Weber State here in Ogden, Utah, some years ago, back in the mid-90s. And I just want to get into a point about what's going on right now on a media story. But first, John, you're doing a good job on carrying the water for the great legacy that Mr. Mullins established, but also realize that the American Free Press newspaper is synonymous with Mr. Mullins, because he spent some of his last days with Michael Collins Piper, Willis
right.
Cardo, and the ones
right.
that established the populist movement in this country back in the mid-50s. That's how far back they go. And Willis Cardo, of course, is a man well in the years now. I think he's in his mid-80s, Rick. And Mr. Cardo, of course, has the mantle. And a younger man, Michael Collins Piper, the man who cracked the John F. Kennedy case and is a former host here on RBN, was a good friend of the late Eustace Mullins. And so I just wanted to make that point, AmericanFreePress.net, and particularly their compendium, the Barnes Review, has done a lot of work concerning Eustace Mullins. So that's just something to consider there that the listeners may want to look at in tandem with what you're saying tonight here, John. And the only point I have in all of this, Rick, is a concrete example of what you're talking about, and that is the current situation of the Tucson shooting. Here we have a Jewish Marxist homo radical, Loeffner, and the Loeffner family that had attended the same Jewish synagogue of Gabrielle Giffords. Here we have that fact established, and yet they are hurling insults out there at the white man in general, and especially the politically active Tea Party type, if you will, out there creating hatred and a climate to where Mrs. Giffords was shot. Do you see where I'm going with this, Rick?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Yes, I've been saying this along, too.
What's that?
I said I've been saying it all along myself, yes.
Well, yes, yes. And here you have, and we even have to watch, even in people we think are our allies, they might be, you know, getting on the station, on the network here, discussing stuff, but throwing us in a different direction. I think Dr. Kay once called them softening agents. And what they're doing is they're like they're coming up and saying things like Judge Roll was not the target.
Right, exactly. All right, we have to break. We have a couple of more calls and try to squeeze in, but thank you for your update, Ed. We'll be right back, though.
Rick Adams is back.
Avenger, the Paul Revere of talk radio.
All righty, here we are. We're back now in the final moments of the program. John, why don't you just mention your website again and the spelling of your name before we run out of time?
JohnKaminsky.info. That's JohnKaminsky, the non-Jewish spelling, .info.
All right. Go ahead. You have another point before we run out of time?
No, go ahead, Rick. Thank you very much. This has been a great privilege, and I'm glad you're there as a conduit to get this information out, because we need a lot more of it.
Well, until they kill me, I'm still here. All right. Let's take Let's see. We've got Eddie in Ohio now. Hello, Eddie.
Hi. Hello, Rick. How are you?
Fantastic. Thank you. What's
Rick,
up? What's up, Ed?
First of all, I couldn't agree more with Mr. Kaminsky. Let me say that right away.
Thank you, Eddie.
One more thing. Let me say one more thing real quick.
Sure.
From the moment every Jew is born, from the instant he is born, okay, he is told, before you do anything in life, ask yourself, is it good for the Jews? So they all know. They all know what's up. Every last one of them that has ever lived is living today or will live in the future. They all know what's up. Okay, you cannot separate this group, period, into the non-Zionist, pro-Zionist, anti-Zionist, blah, blah, blah. That's all rubbish.
Zionists That's right, Eddie.
Zionism has only been around since 1890. The Jews have been wrecking this planet since the Ice Age. Since the Ice
Thank you, Eddie.
Age.
And that's pretty cold. All right, Ed. Thank you for those remarks. I understand exactly what you're saying. Let's see if we can squeeze in Ken from Minnesota now. It's our last call. Hello, Ken.
In the interest of truth, I would like to dispel two incorrect things that have come out on your show tonight. The first is this story about Lochner's family being Jewish and having attended the same synagogue, which the family attending the same, the victim attending the same synagogue as the killer. Okay,
it's a Jewish call.
Michael Collins Piper on Friday recorded a one-hour podcast where he debunked that. He had believed it himself, and he said it is absolutely false that that family has an Irish Catholic background. This is according to Michael Collins Piper. And also, you know, the rabbi of that synagogue has gone through all of their records. There is no history whatsoever of any of the Lochner family members attending that synagogue. Second point. You, Mr. Kaminsky, earlier this evening accused another caller of making up a fictitious conversation with a Jewish anti-Zionist. That conversation I listened to this afternoon. It was on Deanna Spagnola's, the first hour of her program this afternoon. She had as her guest an anti-Zionist Jew.
And who was that?
Deanna Spagnola on RBN this afternoon.
Who was the guest? Who was the guest?
I don't recall his name.
You don't recall?
I don't recall his name. He said at the end of the program, I'm a Jewish man. He went all into all that whole thing, and he spent the entire program criticizing Israel. And this fellow from Wisconsin called in and said, I agree with you in criticizing Israel, but I think you're downplaying the damage which Islamic immigration is doing in Europe. And he said, oh, no, there's no threat.
We had two Jewish calls.
The first and the last, huh?
Well,
all right, thank you. We got a break, though. We're out of time, Ken. Thank you for being on the program, John. And hopefully we'll do this again soon. It's been very interesting. Thank you very much. All right, we're out of time, folks. See you tomorrow night, Lord willing, right here on RBN. Support the network. Good night.